thank you so much, and thank you all for joining. I thought it would be useful to first give a few introductory remarks. BDS is three letters that everybody is talking about. There are entire organizations in the Jewish community that have been formed to counter it. So let's just step back for a minute, and what is BDS? Since even before the founding of the State of Israel, there have been efforts to isolate, demonize, and exclude Israel, you know, notably the Arab economic boycott, which began before the founding of the state. And each day, we at ADL get complaints, for example, of anti-Israel efforts, campaigns, Israeli athletes being excluded from international competitions, Israel missing off of a map. So this is a long-standing effort. BDS is kind of a new chapter or an evolving chapter, a new tactic in the goal to isolate, punish, demonize Israel. BDS stands for Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Campaign. We can trace it back a little bit to the Durban, the UN conference against racism at Durban. In the days preceding the official conference, there was an NGO conference that came out with a truly horrific resolution, a declaration that really focused not on racism writ large, but on Israel, and called for acts of boycott against Israel. In 2004 and 2005, an organization called the Palestinian Campaign for the Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel issued a number of statements that specifically called for boycott, divestment, and sanctions against Israel. And while this call is focused on Israel, BDS is not only campaigns seen on campus. We see it in the churches. We see it in municipalities. We see it in professional associations, and we see it more and more in the financial world. And we see it against cultural figures and artistic and artists. But let me see, where do we see BDS on campus? And I know you're going to be hearing from Stephanie a lot more specifics about it regionally, so I just want to talk about kind of the key campaigns. So the first one is the divestment campaign, which we've seen campuses across the country, and what it is are resolutions put forward through student government or other bodies on campus that say that the university pension fund or university investments should divest from Israeli companies or from Israeli companies that they say aid the occupation. Among them, for like the big ones, are Hewlett Packard, Raytheon, you know all the names. So those are, and we see these resolutions on these divestment resolutions very frequently. A little less this year, by the way, than compared to other years. The goal of these divestment initiatives are not necessarily the actual divestment. I'll get to that in a minute. The goal is really to start a public conversation on campus in which Israel is put on the defensive. So that's really, and the public relations and public perception impact of that. The second is boycotting Israeli goods or even interactions with pro-Israel or Israeli voices. So in terms of boycott of Israeli goods, you see campaigns on campus, for example, to get Sabra Hummus out of university dining halls, which is actually a joke because Sabra Hummus did begin an Israeli company, but it's now owned by Kraft. So I don't know if anyone wants to take Kraft in or out of college dining hall, but there have been a number of initiatives to remove hummus, Sabra hummus, replace it with another one. Usually it's been overturned, but that's an example. And finally, there is the effort to boycott interactions with Israel and even pro-Israel voices. We see that with the main anti-Israel activists on campus, that they'll refuse to engage with an Israeli speaker. They'll refuse to meet with pro-Israel students. They'll refuse to discuss it. On a larger level, we see this through efforts to boycott engagement with Israelis. The biggest example of this, and it could be, for example, an Israeli speaker or an Israeli performer or an Israeli artist coming to campus. But one of the most, I guess, prominent initiatives in the last year and a half or so has been the academic boycott. So what that is an initiative, a campaign through primarily academic associations to say we are not going to at all interact with Israeli academic institutions. So we've seen that most prominently for the American Studies Association, but there are votes percolating in a number of academic associations. And the argument that these campaigners make is that there are some private academic institutions in Israel, but most of them, almost all of them rely very heavily on government money. They're very connected to government ministries, and so they're part of the problem. So these resolutions, these academic boycott resolutions, say we don't want to punish the individual academic, but we as academics are taking a principled stand, and we won't have anything to do with the academic institution. An upcoming vote, an upcoming example of that is the AAA, the AAA, which is the American Anthropological Association, which is the largest academic association that will consider such an initiative, and their voting begins April 15th. So there's that on that level. And by the way, even associations that have passed such academic boycott resolutions, like the ASA, don't know how to implement it because it's very. So if let's say Ben Gurion University sends a request to a professor abroad asking about their view of giving a professor tenure, an American Studies professor tenure, does that mean that professor is not going to write back to Ben Gurion University recommending or not recommending? So it hasn't really been practically implemented. It's more declarative at this point, but it is very kind of slippery slope and dangerous. The other form of academic boycott is more on the grassroots level. And it's more informal. We'll call it a gray boycott, and that is, let's say, academics refusing to go to a conference in Israel. We saw that with Stephen Hawking. Or a professor or a research lab refusing to have Israeli students, or an Israeli professor who submits a paper to a leading academic journal and is rejected. So there are efforts to kind of collect these anecdotal examples where it's unclear whether there's a boycott, but that's something that is also very much happening. So what's happening on U.S. campuses this year? As I said, we've seen fewer divestment initiatives, but more kind of anti-Israel initiatives. Some of the trends that we're seeing very strongly, and let me just say that one of them that you need to know is the main actor that's promoting BDS on campus is FJP, Students for Justice in Palestine. It was founded in 2001 in Berkeley, and it's now on at least 115 campuses in the United States, perhaps more. And it's the primary organizer of anti-Israel events on campus, including BDS initiatives. So some things that you need to know about FJP and these campaigns on campus. Number one is these are coordinated strategies that are very agile. So, for example, last year there was a big kind of push on certain campuses to have campus-wide referenda on supporting divestment, and those failed. So this year there have been no referenda because they see that as a failed strategy. The Sabra Hormuz campaign, for example, we haven't seen a lot of this year because it's seen as a failing strategy. So they're constantly turning on a dime. Something new that we've seen are divestment resolutions that don't even mention Israel, but just kind of imply it. So there's constantly, they're very agile, they're in close coordination, and they see what works, they try, if they fail, they try something new. The other trend, and I know Stephanie will really touch on this, is the issue of what's being called intersectionality. Which can be positive or can be negative. When it comes to BDS, what it is FJP as a group that whose primary goal is to isolate and demonize Israel and promote BDS has really aggressively gone after alliances with other groups that are progressive, that care about victims' rights, that care about minority rights. So, for example, African American groups, Latino groups, LGBTQ groups, And the SDG connection with those groups may not even be based on the conflict. They just might be joining the Black Lives Matter march, et cetera. But what we've seen more and more is out of those relationships that have been built, students, when they come out with their list of demands or their asks from their, these particular groups, it includes a reference to Israel-Palestine. So, for example, recently at CUNY, when there were the protests about tuition and they released their list of demands, tuition and all these other issues that are primary primary for students were listed, but Israel-Palestine, justice for Palestine, was also on the list. In Colombia, for example, there was a campaign called No Red Tape that was focused on sexual violence, but that also included on the list of demands Israel-Palestine. So why do we care about this? There's two major reasons. So I do want to say that when it comes to practical impact on Israel, there's very little. Even when a divestment initiative is passed, even when a boycott resolution is passed, we don't see a practical impact. There's no effect on the economy. Any divestment initiative that has been passed on a campus has gone no further than passage by that student government. It's either the Board of Trustees, the Investment Committee, the President have all rejected it. It's never happened. It's been declarative. The impact that we do see is, number one, the image of Israel, Israel being a wedge issue, and also the impact on campus climate. Are you for Israel? Are you against Israel? Are you pro-justice or are you pro-Israel? It puts Jewish students and supporters of Israel in a very difficult position. It's a climate of isolation and a climate and divisiveness on campus. There are some things that we need to keep in mind when we're approaching campus and that ADL keeps in mind in our strategy in addressing BDS and anti-Israel on campus. The number one issue is what is the real goal? These divestment resolutions have never been acted upon, so how do you address that? You need to go in there and fight against it, so you need to keep that in mind. When it comes to campus, most students on campus don't know about the conflict or divestment or Israel, and they don't care. So there's the hardcore people who are promoting it, there are the hardcore people who are against it, and then there's the vast majority in the middle who really don't care. And they may come out and support BDS because their friends tell them to, or the groups that they're involved in. So how do you address those people in the middle that don't have a hardcore ideology? How do you address that? The other thing, and I think this is really important for everyone to understand, is there's a very crowded field on campus. When you try and address BDS on campus or address helping Jewish students, there are dozens, literally even more, tens of scores of organizations that are doing trainings and taking kids to Israel and doing advocacy workshops. A lot of them are training even the same students. Are taking the same students to Israel. You're speaking into an echo chamber. So how do you address it in the most effective way, and how do you reach the students that are, number one, going to make a difference and are going to be receptive to what you want to do on campus? Also, the most important thing I want to say is that in most cases, people outside of the campus are more hysterical and concerned than people on the campus. And I think this is a caution that we always need to keep in mind. We're in regular touch with Hillels and other campus professionals, Chabad administrators about what's going on campus. And then our regions across the country will get hysterical emails. For example, what's happening on Oberlin, Jewish students are afraid to be on Oberlin. Well, we're in touch with the president, with the Hillel director, with the Jewish students on Oberlin, and we're getting a different story. So you have to listen to what's going on from people on the ground, and you have to, even if you get emails from all these people saying, this is what's going on, there's rampant anti-Semitism at this campus, you need to really hear from what's going on from those who are on campus. So what is ADL doing about this? And you'll hear more specifically regionally from Stephanie. But obviously through our 27 regional offices and through our national offices, we are constantly in touch with local Hillels, with campuses, with campus administrators, and with national Hillels to address, to meet the needs of the students, whether it's a training, whether it's help with talking points, whether it's drafting an op-ed that a student is going to submit to a regional, to a campus newspaper, that's what we're doing. We also have significant research on the key groups and individuals who are engaged in the BDS and anti-Israel campaign, and we issue trend analyses on who they are, what their arguments are, what we're seeing. I think you all should have heard about the new project that we've undertaken with the Reut Institute of Israel, which is a major think tank in Israel, where we are doing a big research project right now on where is BDS now, how is it organized, the main campaigners, and what is the best strategic approach for ADL and how to address it, both at campus and outside of campus. We have other training programs. Our flagship would be the Words to Action program, which empowers Jewish students to identify anti-Zionism, anti-Semitism on campus. And, of course, we also take students to Israel through our campus leaders mission. So there's a lot of these activities. I'm going to end there because time is short. Thank you.
Okay. Hello, everyone. Again, my name is Stephanie Merkes. I am an assistant regional director in New York, and I also serve as our campus liaison. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about what we're seeing on campus regionally in New York. In the interest of time, I'm not going to get to all the campuses, but I'm definitely happy to take any questions at the end. So I'm going to start with CUNY. Anti-Semitism and BDS at CUNY has long been on our radar, but several particularly egregious incidents have been happening over the past few months. You know, Susan mentioned the Million Student March, which really represents this trend of intersectionality. This national campaign to demand free tuition and other benefits for students was totally co-opted as a platform for anti-Zionism. There were several students that were actually caught on camera, and it's on YouTube, saying Zionists out of CUNY and calling for an intifada. And we're seeing this trend that is linking oppressive institutions like racism and homophobia with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And this is really serving to isolate Jewish students and feeling like they don't have the partners like SJP does. And that's really why we're concerned about it. Another incident recently, a faculty meeting at Brooklyn College was interrupted by an anti-Israel group, and one professor reported that he was called a Zionist pig by a student. And in response to these and other incidents, including reports of anti-Semitism at John Jay College and College of Staten Island, CUNY formed a task force to investigate anti-Semitism on campus. And this task force reportedly includes two high-level attorneys as well as students and faculty. And we immediately commended CUNY for taking the allegations seriously. However, we do await a report from the task force. In recent news, on March 14th, the New York State Senate voted to shift $485 million in operating costs for CUNY back to New York City, essentially defunding CUNY by a third of its budget. And what is interesting is that the Republicans in the Senate stated that their reasoning for this cut is to, quote, send a message that the colleges were not taking enough action in response to campus anti-Semitism. And ADL's stance on this, you may have seen our press release, is that defunding CUNY is the wrong solution to a real problem. And while we are pleased that the Senate leadership is reacting to reports of anti-Semitism at CUNY, and we agree that this is definitely a problem that must be addressed, defunding is not an effective solution. CUNY needs to address the anti-Semitism head-on and work to amend the campus climate and fix itself from within, but defunding will punish students and faculty who rely on the funding. We're pleased that Governor Cuomo has since indicated that he intends to continue funding CUNY at the current $1.6 billion budget, and we definitely hope that the New York State Senate leadership will reconsider and decide to fund CUNY fully as well. And what this again represents is that anti-Semitism at CUNY is at the forefront of issues, and we will continue to monitor this extremely closely and again await a report from the task force. I want to switch over now to Vassar College, which we have been working with very closely. And at the end, after I give an update about the campus climate at Vassar, I'll tell a little bit more about what we're actually doing to help the problem. So anti-Israel sentiment at Vassar College is quite pervasive. We have learned that some students feel there is a growing campus trend to equate Zionism or support for Israel with racism and to define Jewish students as the white, entitled, and wealthy group on campus. Students for Justice in Palestine, which again Susan mentioned, is the leading group on campus that promotes BDS and anti-Israel activity. It's quite strong at Vassar, with many students on the Vassar Student Association, which is Vassar Student Government, also involved in SJP and anti-Israel programs. According to one professor we spoke with, a significant number of humanities professors are anti-Israel, and many believe that the sentiment on campus is fostered and encouraged by these professors. This is only reinforced by 8 academic departments, including Jewish studies, sponsored a lecture by Rutgers Professor of Women and Gender Studies, Jasbir Pthur, for our claims that Israel harvests organs of Palestinians, that they kill. Her lecture included the charge that Israel has a deliberate agenda to stunt the prosperity of Palestinians by preventing resources to reach Gaza and the West Bank, along with many other claims that we do feel cross the line into anti-Semitism. And we wrote actually a letter to the administration and to President Hill expressing our concern about the speaker. And of course, while not saying that any speaker should not be allowed to promote their message on campus, of course, that would be a breach of free speech, but that there should be counter-narratives, so this is not the only message that students are receiving. So earlier this month, on March 6th, the BDS resolution was voted on in the student government at Vassar. So this resolution actually passed, with 15 in favor and 7 opposed. But it's important to note that a resolution on campus is really a political statement of support for BDS. It doesn't actually have any action attached to it. However, there is also a BDS amendment that is different than a resolution that was also voted on in the student government. And this failed by a vote of 12 in favor and 10 opposed. This needed a two-thirds majority. And an amendment would actually, if passed, the amendment would permit the student government to restrict funding from any student activity or group that purchases a product that is either made by or supports Israel in any way. So to use Susan's example, if a club wanted to have a party with mac and cheese and they wanted to use a Kraft product that, or they wanted to use hummus, which is made by Kraft, it would essentially say that they would not be allowed to receive funding. So it's very problematic. An important note about why this amendment did not pass is because the Vassar administration notified student government that if it were to pass, student government would lose their right altogether to fund student activities. And this really represents tensions that are happening on that campus. You know, you could see tweets and comments on the Vassar student newspaper website, which is public, blaming, you know, the quote, white administration for impinging on the rights of students to combat, you know, Israel, which is an oppressive regime. And since that BDS vote, it's now been almost a month, we have heard from students that the tension has decreased a bit. You know, the pro-BDS students seem to be taking a bit of a break from their anti-Israel activism, but it doesn't mean the issue has been resolved. And, you know, I want to get to a little bit more, you know, about our tangible work and impact on campus. So Susan mentioned our premier program. It's called Words to Action, and this is really a workshop that helps students to gain information, resources, and tangible response strategies to address anti-Semitism and anti-Israel bias. We recently led a workshop at Hunter College, and we're hosting students from Columbia, NYU, and CUNY campuses at ADL next week to participate in a program. Additional campuses that have hosted Words to Action include Pace University, Syracuse, Hofstra, of course, Vassar, University of Albany, Union, Rochester, Cornell University, and several Jewish federations have hosted programs for their students in the area. But in addition to our work directly on campus with college students, we're also impacting students in middle school and high school with this Words to Action program that we implement in synagogues or JCCs, teen engagement programs, because we feel that it's also our role to raise students' awareness of anti-Semitism and anti-Israel bias before they reach college. And we're very proud that, you know, in 2015, we actually had over 1,300 students and adults participate in our Words to Action programs. And just in the first quarter of 2016, we've had over 400 students participate. We'll also be sending 3 CUNY students in our upcoming Campus Leaders Mission to Israel, which is an opportunity for Jewish and non-Jewish student leaders to gain a firsthand perspective of Israel, meet with a culturally diverse population, and learn, you know, really on the ground about the strategic and social challenges facing Israel. And a bit more about our work on Vassar. So we have a really great partnership with the Chabad Rabbi Vassar, and he has helped us to develop a really comprehensive program to help students address the complicated issues of bias. And we're continuing to do this, and hopefully our next program will be really focused on Jewish activism, because what we're seeing at Vassar is that there is definitely tension on campus, and there are many more students that are active and are bringing their voice on the SJP and on the anti-Israel side. And while students, we feel like there are some Jewish students that are being affected by this tension, but they're not necessarily empowered to bring a voice. And we feel like that's where ADL can have a role, and we hope to really empower those students through programs in this semester and next. And that, I'll open it up to Esteban Neuer.
Great. Thank you very much, Susan and Stephanie. We really want to be able to open the call to questions. So we're going to ask again. You can press *2 if you want to ask a question and be added to the queue. So we're going to start that process now.
The next question is from
Josh Cook.
Your line is now open.
This is Josh Cohn. The problem of intersectionality seems to be a major one. I'm wondering what strategies ADL may be pursuing, or what strategies ADL may be urging Jewish students on campus to pursue to try to defuse the problem of intersectionality, or to in fact allow Jewish students to ally with some of the student groups that are otherwise allying with SJP. Thank you.
Ms. Susan, I'll take that question. Thanks, Josh. So there, you know, in the handbook that any Jewish advocacy organization, Israel advocacy organization or training on campus does, like, the number one thing is, you know, make contacts and join, you know, and make coalition, build coalitions. And there are a number of challenges to that that we're finding. So number one, when Jewish students build coalitions solely through the prism of Israel, it already turns people off, because they're saying, like, well, we don't care about Israel, or you're only doing it for us. So there are some organizations where they'll say, oh, come, you know, build it, and you scratch their back, they'll scratch your back. But if you're entering it not at a point of, you know, really agreeing on the issues, it tends not to go very far. The other issue, which I think is a very big problem that we're going to have to figure out, is that more and more Jewish students, we've seen anecdotally that if the Jewish student wants to join a Black Lives Matter or an immigration rights group on campus, they're, you know, being told, well, you're privileged. You are part of the problem. You can't really get where we're coming from, and you can't be part of this. So those are two issues. One, we're still figuring out really how we can address it, but one thing that we're looking at very seriously and we're talking with partners on campus about is ADL has such a wide activist agenda when it comes to civil rights issues. So whether it's 50 states against hate, whether it's immigration reform, whether it's LGBTQ rights, whether it's, you know, the vast majority, how can we bring those issues to campus where there are so many national coalition partners on those very issues, and frame these campaigns with Jewish students so they can, you know, get engaged in those topics and build coalitions through that? How can ADL play a role in kind of bringing these issues in a real way to Jewish students on campus? And I think that dovetails a lot with what Stephanie was saying, trying to do on Vassar. What does Jewish activism mean, and how can you get involved? And not through the prism of Israel, but through other issues that Jews really care about. And I don't want to say that it's a cynical way of then going to Israel through the back door, but once you have those coalitions, if something does come up and a coalition partner addresses BDS, you're in more of a position to say, listen, Israel for me is part of my Jewish identity, and this is why I care about it, and this is why I don't think that it's a good idea. So those are some of the initiatives we are thinking about.
Thank you.
I'm also just going to add one other point, just to amplify what Susan said, is that it also places the onus, I think, a little bit on students who are coming from the left a little bit, and shows the importance of how important it is to build coalitions. I think it's so often it's much easier to form coalitions with groups that are like-minded, but that often is leaves you with just the college Republican group. But we need to really support those students who are forming natural alliances with groups. With groups that are coming from the left, and we need to encourage, really give kids the empowerment to be able to do things like that. If anybody else has any questions, please press star 2.
The next question is from
Paul Roth.
Your line is now open.
Hey, hello. Hi, thanks very much. I wonder if you could tell me what efforts you're making to reach out to confirmation classes, for example, at synagogues or elsewhere, because my sense is we're finding a lot of American young Jewish students are not equipped with the background to respond to what the BDS groups are hurling at them in terms of delegitimizing Israel.
Absolutely. So I mentioned it maybe quickly before, our program called Words to Action, and this is really what we use as our way to engage young students. I definitely agree with you that students are largely not aware of what's happening on campus, and they also don't have the background information, whether it's about Israel or about response strategies or what organizations to call when they have something happen to them, or who in the administration should be their ally. They largely don't know this. So we implement this program not just with college students on the actual campus, but we use JCCs and Hebrew high school classes. We do lots of Sunday programs with parents and students, and I do my best to, you know, I'm out in the community meeting with anyone who has, you know, a stake in this and trying to have as many programs as possible and reach as many students. I would absolutely love if you would reach out to me if you are involved in some form of Jewish institution that has a reach to students and we can set up a program. This is really my main force in this position. It's trying to make connections with host institutions to invite us to have this program. And we give them our handouts and our Israel advocacy guide and so many resources. And it also puts a face to the ADL name. You know, my closing is always, ADL is here for you. We can help. If you get to campus and you hear that a speaker is coming that might have biased views and you want to know what questions that you can ask so that you can have a dialogue, we can provide that information. So, actually yesterday I was in Westchester. I'm not sure where you're from. It's possible you're from Westchester, but I was speaking to 6th and 7th grade students. And you know what? These students, their mind was not on campus, but I laid the groundwork. And I also showed them that there are complicated questions that they will encounter, and I hopefully encourage them to read and talk to their parents. And it really does make an impact.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a challenge, but it's important to get to them before they get to campus.
Absolutely. And I can assure you that
we're not the only organization doing this. I think we all really believe that when you get to campus and all of a sudden you hear microaggressions and you see apartheid walls, that's not the time to realize that it's an issue. And largely students, even that go to Jewish day school, even that have that Israel education, it's not always a link. It's not always the empowerment to speak up and to address it, but also, you know, knowing the history behind the conflict. You really have to merge the two. And that's what Words to Action does.
Okay. What's your phone number, Stephanie?
Sure. My number is 212.
Yeah.
885.
Yeah.
7736.
7736. I'll try and reach out to you.
Okay. I look forward to it.
Thank you.
Again, *2 if you have any other questions. We're going to see if there are any other questions in the queue. That's the pausing that you... Okay, we'll ask again if there are any other questions. We'll wait a minute or so. Okay, so we're actually going to wrap it up then. We thank you very, very much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us today. We hope you found the call informative. As you heard, please do not hesitate to contact Susan, Stephanie, or any ADL staff if you have any further questions. Thank you very much for giving up your lunch hour with us, and have a great rest of the day.